welcome to another episode of What Matters in North Carolina. On today's show, we will be talking with Brooke Medina about a recent article she published on the NC Civitas website, that's www.nccivitas.org, about how people have withdrawn from civic involvement in their communities and how the government has stepped into that role, growing in the process. This is a really interesting article she's put together that really kind of dives down into what's been going on in the last couple generations about people being involved in their civic organizations, the JCs, the 4-H, talking about kids on and adults, VFW for your Veterans of Foreign Wars. I mean, all these different civic groups and community groups that are no longer seeing the involvement they used to see. So we'll go ahead and move right in and talk with her about that right now. All right, so now we're talking with Brooke Medina about a recent article she posted on the Civitas Institute website talking about oversized government and undersized communities, it kind of sounds like. So how are you doing today, Brooke?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Will you kind of start us off by talking about what your article is about and kind of giving us a little overview of what you wrote?
Okay, that would be great. So in this article, I was desiring to just delve into a topic that many of us just intuitively know when we observe the current situation politically and societally in the United States. And really what we're witnessing and what we have witnessed over these past 40 years is just a steady decline in the United States of community involvement. The federal government, of course, has seen this as well, and they've tried to respond to those needs. And in the process, they continue to expand their depth and breadth, which, is debatable as to whether or not that's beneficial to society at large. So this article is just really beginning to unpack that. There will be more to follow, but this is basically the introduction to that conversation that many people all across the country are having.
So this is kind of talking about the decline of like the 4-H club and the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, and for adults, Rotary, the JCs, and all these like these civic organizations, and the decline in membership that they're seeing, which leads to a decline in people taking care of their community, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, definitely. So we are witnessing that sort of decline in those civic organizations. We're also seeing a decline in just involvement in religious institutions, even just an involvement in one's neighborhood, caring about the people that live next door to us. I have moved throughout the country for the past 14 years, and what I have seen living on the West Coast and on the East Coast is there is an abundance of people living in neighborhoods that don't really even know who they're living next to, and that's a problem. I believe that we need to address. It shouldn't be that we're islands unto ourselves, and of course some people might debate that, but I think that the proof is in the pudding. So the fruit of what we're seeing in society, where there is so much partisanship and so much disconnect with those that we could otherwise try to find some common ground with, is just it's spreading like wildfire, to be sure. We see that quite regularly, even in this most recent election in 2016. And my suggestion is that we could address those problems if we look more towards community rather than federal government for the answers.
Yeah, and I can totally relate to that, just thinking about my neighborhood, because I know the names of the people across the street. But all I know about them is they have an annoying dog. It's a little white chihuahua. And then the people directly to my right, I don't even know her name. All I know is she has two annoying dogs, and she's on her back porch all the time, basically hanging out. And then on the other side of her is another annoying dog that will not go away from my fence. And that's all I know about those three people. Now, my neighbor on my left side, I know them. I talk to them, so it's a little better there, but I mean, really, in my neighborhood, I know the person directly next to me.
Right.
And that's it.
And that's not the exception. That's by far the rule here in the United States. I would say the vast majority of people do not know their neighbors. And that, I think, stems, though, more from the centralization of not only government, but centralization of socialization through the medium of social media, for example. So many Americans are opting to live their lives vicariously, maybe through their social media account, rather than actually going out on their streets and in their communities and getting to know those people that surround them. So, you know, just to even speak a little bit more to that point, Mark Zuckerberg was recently interviewed in a CNBC article where he was celebrating the 2 billion monthly user milestone that Facebook had just reached. And if you don't know Mark Zuckerberg, which most people do, he is the founder of Facebook. But what he was really celebrating was this vision that he was seeing come to fruition, which the vision was to create community through this social media giant. But my point in writing this article and discussing the Zuckerberg story is that what he was celebrating really emphasizes what we are lacking in society, which is something to unify our lives. We're finding it on Facebook, or at least a false version of it. Whereas my proposal and the impetus for my article, which was one written by Senator Lee of Utah, is that we need to rebuild community so that we don't have Facebook and federal government filling that void that have been left in the wake of people becoming more reclusive.
So I wonder, though, is there a place for both? Because you were talking about how you have moved all across the country over the last 14 years. So you've met a lot of people who are not in your direct community anymore. They're friends from other places, and Facebook and social media allows you to stay connected with them. So how do you balance that with trying to insert yourself in your immediate community at the same time?
Very good question. And that's an important point. We do not live in the 19th century or the 20th century anymore. We are in the 21st century. And I believe that social media has some great promise and has already been just such a great way in which we can connect with those that are in other parts of the country. My goal in writing this article, though, is to shine a light on how much we have actually become just more members of that community rather than the actual tangible community around us. So I would say we need to order our priorities, and I would question Facebook community being put above just, you know, physical community within our own neighborhood and our own city.
Right. And I see that, and I go, it's so easy to fall into that, though. It's so easy to go on and say, all right, what's this guy from high school doing? What's, you know, so-and-so got married, so-and-so had a baby. You talk about your family. If your family doesn't live close, my cousin's doing this. And it's so easy to just fall right in and have that, you know, quote-unquote need for community met in a way that doesn't actually improve your immediate community.
Right, and that's the thing. So as you cited those examples of seeing what a friend from high school is up to or a cousin that lives far away, those are really important things, and that is definitely, Facebook is one of the ways that I have used to keep connected with so many friends, and so I am not slighting it in the least. I am merely suggesting that we use it, if we're interacting with people that live locally, let's use it in a way that springboards actual physical contact with those people as well. You know, it's one thing if someone loses a family member, for example. It's one thing to offer condolences on a social media post. It's an entirely different thing to actually show up at that memorial service or in the hospital where someone that you know is fighting. So I just think that Facebook and social media can be used as that springboard to go into deeper community, but let's just make sure that we don't replace real community with it.
Oh, yeah, and it's not even like the, you know, major intense moments like a death in the family. It's, you know, I get a notification. If I'm sure if I go to my Facebook right now, it will tell me whose birthday it is. I'm sure it's one of my Facebook friends' birthdays. Most, you know, more often than not it is. But me clicking that, and then it lets me put a little message without even having to go to their page. Versus if I pick up the phone and call that person, say, hey, happy birthday. Or even a text message as opposed to just doing it on Facebook. It's a different thing. It means a different thing. And really, I mean, we've kind of gotten off of the federal government side of this and talking more about the social media side. But so what came first in this kind of the egg or the chicken, you know, argument? Was this the federal government moved into a hole that was left behind, or was this there was the encroachment of the federal government, and the community kind of goes, well, they're doing this now?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question, and I believe that it deserves its own conversation. A lot of what we see, I think, was it stemmed from good intentions, even as far back as the 1930s with Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal, wherein we saw suffering Americans and wanted to help those and ensure that the poverty that we witnessed and the economic devastation sandwiched between two world wars didn't happen again. So largely, I would say that the growth of federal government has stemmed from good intentions on the part of some, not all though. But my concern has really been that what federalism ought to mean to the state of North Carolina. So the growth of federal government has meant that we have entrusted Washington, D.C. with so much responsibility that we in North Carolina want to actually have a say in. But we're relinquishing that say when we continue to rely upon government-backed programs and initiatives that we expect to cultivate these strong communities, when that responsibility really rests on us. And so I know that this sounds like an indictment against society as a whole, but it's really not. It's just the hopes of raising awareness and amplifying this message, which is that if we want to see society change, that's up to us. It's not a government program that's going to do that for us. Government programs don't bring food to our neighbors. You know, government programs aren't the shoulder that we cry on. They are not the person or the program that plays soccer with my son. Now, can we use government programs like, let's say, you know, city parks and recreation for a soccer game? Of course we can. But let's be careful let's be conscious and mindful of what we're sacrificing when we continue to look to big government to solve a lot of our economic problems and family issues.
I mean, you can relate this idea to other things, though, too. Like, it's basically anything you take your eye off the ball. You if you're not engaged in what your child is learning and being taught, public school will take over, and they'll be learning whatever goes on there. If you're not taking care of your community through these civic organizations, government's going to step in and try and do those things. So whatever you want to be involved in and have a say in, you really need to do.
Absolutely.
I mean, that seems like your core point, and then I think in the long run you'll be better off for it.
Yes, I agree. And the thing is, when you're in community and when you're actually providing a say in what goes on in your surroundings, you're the one with eyes on the ground, right? Just like the military, the ones with boots on the ground are the ones that are best prepared and equipped to make some of those difficult calls that, okay, someone over in D.C. could make, but are they really the best equipped to make it? And I would argue that the same is the case with certain economic initiatives and welfare initiatives. Those people that are actually living among those that are suffering and hurting are the best ones to really reach out and extend a hand up. It's not, you know, it could come in the form of a check, sure. And actually conservatives have largely proved that they're willing to provide help in the form of a check, but it's been in the form of their own private funds rather than the liberal progressive approach of requiring government to provide that check for somebody at the expense of taxpayers that have no say or have no vested interest in that particular person's struggles.
Right. And what I think about talking about, you know, the boots on the ground and people knowing what they need who are there. So in the most recent state budget that was just passed here in North Carolina, there is a $30,000 allocation for downtown revitalization to the Cleveland area. So I live in the Cleveland area. It's near Clayton, and it's an unincorporated area that does not have a downtown. There is no downtown in Cleveland. It is not a town. And there is $30,000 coming to Cleveland for revitalization of our non-existent downtown. Now, if someone had come to someone in the area and said, what does this area need? I'm sure there would be a few things they could say. But there was just this unasked for allocation that somebody in Raleigh thought would make sense. And it's, you know, talking about the boots on the ground, it does not make any sense to give us money to revitalize a non-existent part of our town. But people in the community know what we need, and that's kind of what you're saying. I mean, it's the people who are there who know.
Right. Well, and when you free up people that maybe have more of an entrepreneurial spirit anyways, and you free them up with that by removing the barriers that they have to owning a business or paying, you know, just that you reduce the taxes that they have to pay, you are creating a way for those boots on the ground to actually respond to the market and to the signals that the consumers in that area are sending to them. But when we have regulations and we have extra unnecessary tax burdens and we have money coming from elsewhere that is allocated for one particular project when that's not really the project we need, then we're not really helping. So it's great to have good intentions, but what's more important is sound judgment and making wise choices that are in the best interest of the citizens that live in our communities. And the best people to be able to advocate for those choices are the people in those communities, not the state government, not the federal government, but the living, breathing human beings that are residing and carrying the burdens of those next to them.
And it just seems like a compounding problem, though, too, because as the government steps in to do more of these things, you'll have the people who maybe would or are thinking about or would want to do these things going, well, my tax dollars are already going to this, so I can't put more to it or that much more into it because I'm already have this tax burden and it's going for that purpose. So it's just like a kind of a, you know, snowball effect, downhill, you know, compounding issue.
Right, absolutely. And that's why I believe a return to federalism, and what I mean by federalism is that what federalism brings along with it is decentralization of government, and that means that communities are better equipped and they have more freedom to have say in their communities. And so they are freed up to use the funds that they have earned to give in ways that they see as valuable and worthwhile. I think that there's this huge fear that if the government doesn't take our taxes and redistribute them, that poor people will suffer. But as we've seen over the past 40 years, the decline in the civic involvement has led to just greater government. And I mean, if we all just look around at society at large, do we really feel like we're better off? I would venture to say that if private citizens were able to retain more of their money and they simultaneously were encouraged to care for their fellow man, we would see a lot more accomplished on behalf of the poor and the hurting.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on and talking with us about your article. And if people want to read it, they can go to nccivitas.org. It is called When Government Grows, Community Dies. And thank you again, Brooke.
Thank you, Matt.
All right. Thank you to Brooke for taking the time to sit down and talk with us about her article and a lot of really interesting things unpacked during that segment. So if you want to hear more shows like this, more episodes of the What Matters in North Carolina show, more of the shows on the Freedom Action Network, go to the Freedom Action Network website at freedomactionnetwork.com. If you want to follow along with us on social media, you can do that on Facebook and Twitter at What Matters NC. And if you're not already subscribed to the show, you can do that by searching What Matters in North Carolina, where you listen to podcasts. And we'll catch you again.